So who's in charge? The clock or us? Just a question. No, that's never mind. It's another class altogether. So we're beginning our class this morning. We're continuing our study on the core things that we see in all four Gospels. We've mentioned the fact that all four Gospels are a little bit different, right? Matthew and Mark are pretty close, mostly. Luke, the beloved physician, very detailed in what he gives us, writing to possibly a specific person or any lover of God as he addresses his letter. And then John, you know, he's just, you know, very different in his approach, but also very different in his audience as to who he's writing to. So we're looking at how do these all overlap? And we've talked about, we're going to look at some of the 11 things where they overlap. You can go ahead and pull up the projector. Is it up there? We're going to talk about that there's 11 things. And we also mentioned that, you know, you could divide these up and turn these 11 into, you know, 22, 33 things that are there. But anyway, we're going to look at these core things. I want to look at, before we begin, just kind of remind us, in Acts 10, why we're doing this in an interesting parallel. Acts 10, beginning in verse 36. And you remember what happened in Acts 10, right? You have Peter going to whose house? Who are we going to? Cornelius, right? He's going to Cornelius' house, and he preaches the gospel to Cornelius. And verse 36 highlights the central message beginning of verse 36, highlights that central message. And he says, "The word which he sent to the sons of Israel, preaching peace through Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all. You yourselves know the thing which took place throughout all Judea, starting in Galilee, after the baptism which John proclaimed," which we mentioned and have studied in this study. "You know Jesus of Nazareth, how God anointed him with the Holy Spirit and with power, and how he went about doing good and healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. We are witnesses of all the things he did, both in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem. They also put him to death by hanging on the cross. God raised him up on the third day and granted him to become visible, not to all people, but to witnesses who were chosen beforehand by God, that is, to us, who ate and drank with him after he arose from the dead. And he he ordered us to preach to the people and solemnly to testify that this is the one who has been appointed by God as judge of the living and the dead. Of him, all the prophets bear witness that through his name, everyone who believes in him receives forgiveness of sins." So the very things that we're looking at in this study are things that Peter highlights in that message. If you're going to go preach the gospel to somebody, these things are the things you're going to be talking about. And we're going to see from four different points how the Gospels talk about these events. And we're going to look at Gethsemane, as you can see up on the screen. If we want to... Oh yeah, I have a clicker today. So here we have the passages where they all overlap, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. What do you notice about John there? He's got one verse. He doesn't give us a lot on this. He basically says they went. And so we don't get a lot necessarily about the events that unfolded in Gethsemane, but he does mention that they went to Gethsemane. They all overlap that they went to that certain place. And they all leave out just enough information that we can't say much other than that. They all mention, as far as how are they all connect, what do they all mention? They all mention the fact that they went. And they all kind of leave out enough information that they don't overlap a lot. Now, I want to ask you this, and you'll see this in sort of the details of the betrayal too, and Jesus' response. If they leave out some information that another one of the writers does not mention, does that make it a contradiction? What is the nature of a contradiction? Yeah, so it's a situation where one, and you guys are all saying this, but I need to repeat it for those who are listening. It's a situation where they are completely opposed to one of them. The information is completely opposed. The fact that one person records Jesus saying one thing And another person records, another apostle records Jesus saying another thing. Doesn't mean they contradict. It just doesn't mean they recorded all the conversation, right? How big would the New Testament be if they recorded all of Jesus' conversation? You wouldn't want to carry it around, right? Yes, sir. Yes, and every one of these men, from a different background, a different point of view, and writing to different people, there was a study that was done about, well, not really a study, but just an exercise that you can do. You put like 30 random things on a table, all right? And you give people 10 seconds to go up to the table and then sit back down and then write down what they remember seeing on the table. Depending on your background and what you have, what's been going on in your life or whatever, you will see different things than other people see, right? And so that's the case in this situation. Now, we realize, obviously, that they were inspired and that God gave them the ability to remember all things, but it also that they were writing to specific people for a specific purpose. Yes, sir? Yes, sir, exactly. These men are inspired, and they are the words that they are writing are inspired. And John even mentions that the very things these are written, these specific ones are written, that you may believe. And so it's interesting how these coincide. So if we go over to Matthew and start looking at what he has for us, where does he emphasize in Gethsemane? Let me get my... We need a bigger podium. I need a desk. Okay, so if you look at what we're emphasizing, we have the two sons of Zebedee are specifically mentioned in verse 37. In the others, that he mentions them by name, but in this case he mentions them by the two sons of Zebedee. And what is he doing here? What is Jesus doing as he goes into the garden? Jesus came to the place called Gethsemane. Yes. What does he do with his disciples? What's that? He told them to wait. Did they all wait in the same bunch? Like the Bradys, just there? What did he do? What did he do with them that was a little bit different? He took some of them away, right? Three of them. And we'll see some more details about that with some other ones. And so he separated them out. Why would he do that? Why would he stagger them like that? Because they were cooler than the other guys? Perhaps they understood more what was going on. Some have made and postulated that this is a very similar thing that, like a king, if the king was out in the field in battle or something like that, and he went off to have a time of solace, a king would do that. As far as, you know, if you're trying to approach the king, you have two layers of protection to try and approach the king. So that's how some have said, well, this is similar. We kind of mentioned that in our study about David as well. David did that as well. So anyway, so some have postulated that. We don't know exactly why, but this is what happened. Verse 39 mentions something that the other ones do not. What does he say in verse 39 as far as what he did when he prayed? He fell on his face to pray. What do we know about what's going on? What do we know? Why would Jesus be in that position? Because when we talked about the feeding of the 5,000, how did he pray? He looked up, right? Why would this be different? He knew it was going to happen. The weight on his shoulders, the thing that's going on, the why he was praying was very different. His heart was probably in a very different place. I'm sorry? Exactly, yes. And so we get a deeply grieved. My soul, he even says in verse 38, and when he says this in the others, my soul is deeply grieved. To what degree? To the point of death. Would you believe that Jesus was not exaggerating? Now, we would exaggerate, right? Do you guys exaggerate? Maybe 99.9% of the time? No, which is an exaggeration. Anyway, so yes, we maybe exaggerate like everybody's doing it. Anyway, so in this situation, I don't believe Jesus is probably exaggerating in his description of how he is greeted at this point. But he fell on his face. And then also, what Jesus prayed for the second time is mentioned in verse 42. So as he's there praying, the text tells us that he comes back to his disciples, and what are they doing? Sleeping. We're talking, it's late at night, guys. It's late at night. I mean, and they've been, you know, having the supper. They've eaten a lot of lamb. You know, they've got all this, you know. Have you ever eaten a large meal late at night? And then, you know, what? And then they've walked here, so what have they been doing? But we also get some more information later on about why they might be sleeping. But he says to them, he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. He said to Peter, so you men could not keep watch for me. How long? 1 hour. How long was Jesus praying? 1 hour. So no, they could not. And so what does he say to them? What's his response? Keep watching. Stay awake. Wake up. Keep watching so you don't enter into temptation. And then he goes away a second time. And Matthew mentions what he prays for the second time. What is he praying for in verse 42? What does he mention specifically? He's obedient, right? Thy will be done. If this cup cannot pass, thy will be done. And so Matthew mentions specifically this the second time what he prays for. And then they prayed the same words the third time in verse 44. And, you know, he comes back in verse 43, finds them sleeping again. Their eyes are heavy. And then he prays and goes away to pray the same thing once more. Verse 45, then he came to his disciples and said to them, are you still sleeping and taking your rest? Behold, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is being betrayed to the hands of the sinners. And we'll talk about the betrayal next. But do you remember, what's topography-wise, where are we? Like, so they've crossed the Kidron, and John mentions this. They crossed the Kidron, and they kind of went up on Gethsemane. And we'll see what Gethsemane is in a moment. And Jerusalem's sort of across the way. And when we talk about the betrayal, I want you to kind of, why would Jesus be able to say the hour is at hand and they're coming? He could probably see them. They didn't come out there like in stealth mode whenever they came out to Jesus. It is highly likely that he could see them coming and hear them coming. So anyway, we'll talk about that later when we get close, when we talk about the betrayal. So Mark emphasizes the disciples by name in verse 33. So that's a little bit different other from Matthew. And then we also have it highlighted, the theme of Jesus' prayer in verse 35. And he went beyond them and fell on the ground and began to pray, if it were possible that the hour might pass him by. And so if there's any other way to do this, but again, if thy will be done. Also, he says in Mark mentions Abba, Father, Father, Father in Jesus' prayer. And so we see that connection. Again, Matthew mentions this. Mark mentions it as well, just the 1 hour, the time stamp. And then verse 40, we have the reason the disciples didn't answer him the second time. Why didn't he just let them sleep in verse 40? What does it say? They were very heavy. He came to them, found them sleeping. Their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. They didn't even know what to say. What do you say? Here's a guy who's asked you to stay awake, and it seems like they're just so tired they didn't even know how to respond to Jesus in that moment. So they're both in the same situation, right? In the same moment, right? Perspective-wise, are they vastly different? Do you think if they understood the gravity of the situation that they might be able to be a little more alert? Is that ever the case when we are in trials in our life? We may come in this auditorium and some of us be falling on our face before God in worship because of the situation we're in, but others may not be. We're in the same situation, the same environment, but we don't know what's going on with the other person. And in this situation, they didn't understand. They were talking with Jesus face to face in relationship to what's going on. They could see, I imagine, the sweat that was on them, but they didn't get the gravity of the situation that Jesus did, obviously. So let's go to Luke. He does not mention the name of the place. We don't in Luke's account. It just says the place. And he prays for him not to enter into temptation. But he does say that he's a stone's throw away. So it gives us a distance in relationship to how he separated the apostles. He also mentions, what does he mention in verse 43 that none of the other ones mention? That there's an angel there. What is this angel doing? What's that? Strengthening him. So was his prayer answered? His prayer was answered. An angel was sent to strengthen him. What the details of that, we don't know. But heaven was listening to his prayer. What else do we have here? Verse 44. Yes. Again, why was it interesting that Luke mentions this? He was the physician, right? It's interesting that Luke would mention this, that the others do not mention this. And you've probably heard it say this as far as the stress of the monk, capillaries can break in the skin and cause that to occur. Yes, the placement of that is different. He does mention not to pray, to not enter in temptation to them in the other accounts. But you're right. We see that in a different order here, praying not to enter in temptation, and this the praying. So you're exactly right. Yep. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And that's what he does with that.
Yes. Yep. It was an answer, right? It was an answer. It was not necessarily what he was asking for, but the strength was given to him to succeed, to do what he needed to do, and God does that for us as well, right? Yes, ma'am.
Well, he answered in the right way, too.
Yeah.
He didn't say, God, this is what I want you to do.
Yes, the attitude was there that it was no matter what, I will submit my will to your will. I will do what you ask of me. And again, that's also very exemplary when we think about our own prayers. Verse 45, and this is interesting, when he arose from the prayer, he came to the disciples and found them sleeping from sorrow. Sleeping from sorrow. What does that mean? Sleeping because you are sorrowful. Exhaustion, it could be. I don't know. I'm asking you. It could be that they're sleeping because of sorrow. It could be a psychological state because of what's going on. Here they have but Luke mentions that the others do not. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Were you able to hear that? That there are other historical cases where this has been recorded, where this actually took place. I mentioned the name. I don't know that I can repeat it, but this is an actual medical condition as far as what Jesus is going through, where people who have been facing death, horrible death, or extremely stressful situation beyond what is normal, that this would take place. And so, as was mentioned, that this is something that kind of highlights the humanity of Jesus, in that he was not given any sort of blue pill that would allow him to just not feel or not be sensitive to the whole gamut of emotions and feelings and pain that he was about to go through. He was not numb to what was going on. as he went through these trials. And so it makes a sacrifice even more more grand, thinking of what he went through for us. Thank you for that. John's going to be short, right? He mentions going over the Kidron Valley, but he also mentions something the other ones do not. So, what does he mention? Verse 1. It's all in verse 1. What does he mention? What details do we get here that we don't get from the other accounts? It's a garden. It's a garden. Gethsemane actually means the place of the press. So this was... some of you, I think, have been there. I think some of you have. Some of you guys have been there. This is an olive garden, right? Or no. I believe it was an olive garden. That there is actually an olive press there in that location. And so it was a garden place that they went to. They crossed the Kidron Valley and went up to this place to pray. John gives us basically that kind of information about the actual location, but he gives us no details like the others do as far as the actual prayer and things of that nature. Lessons from Gethsemane, of course, the importance of prayer. Praying for an hour, I don't know if you guys have done that before, but just talking to God in this way. And then his response, obviously, the need for companionship. Jesus, why was it important to Jesus that they were awake? Standing guard. What's that? He didn't want to be alone. This is by no means the same kind of comparison, but if you're driving a long distance and everybody in the van's asleep, you're essentially alone, right? Alone in your trial. So by no means the same comparison, but if they're awake, then they are companions with him in what he's going through. If they're asleep, then they're by no means companions. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Witnesses. Exactly. Very good point. Witnesses of what he's going through. And I don't know if you ever had counselors, but you don't go to somebody and needing comfort and they sleep on you, right? No. Yes, sir. Yep. Very much so. And he goes into this head first. Doesn't hold back from what he's supposed to be doing. Excellent. So another lesson is obedience. Yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And so we see this great obedience. We see it in his prayer and the fact that he would do this. So a great lesson from Gethsemane. Again, sort of in connection with that submission, not my will, but your will be done, as far as lessons from Gethsemane. Very quickly, as we will have an abbreviated class time this morning, we'll try and go through the betrayal. And here we have the accounts listed for us. They all name Judas as the betrayer. They all mention a multitude of people. They all mention Peter drawing the sword. And so that's where they are all similar in what the information they give us. So we will probably have to... as we go through this betrayal, I'll try to go through this maybe Wednesday, try and get through this information. But the betrayal, Matthew, as we mentioned, let me just go back. So here's where the betrayal, we'll stop here. But when we get to the betrayal Wednesday, this is where this information is found, if you want to note it and be looking at that in preparing for our class next Wednesday, that'd be great. Thank you for your time this morning.